All right, let's head over to the Zoom line. Mr. Robert Downey Jr. Oh, Mr. Robert Downey on the line. Look at that. How many people have actually messed that up before in the past? How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you, sir?
Not too bad. I understand you're coming from Colorado. Talk to me a little bit about your geography and what brings you to Colorado.
So I'm a petroleum engineer. I'm also a fourth generation Colorado native. I started Shale Ingenuity in 2019. I've been in the oil industry a long time. I've worked for majors like Amoco and in large independents like Devon and Encana. And in 2019, I started researching how oil is produced from shale reservoirs. And I started a company called Shale Ingenuity. And we've invented and developed and have proven now some processes that we think can rejuvenate the shale oil industry today. There's about 100,000 producing shale oil wells in most of the basins around the U.S. And today, about 30% of those, maybe 35% of those wells are now approaching depletion. They're making, you know, somewhere between 10 to 25 barrels a day. And at the same time, they've only recovered maybe 5 or 6% of the oil in place. So most of the oil is still sitting there. And it's awaiting a process or processes to extract more of that oil out of the shale reservoir. So that's what we've invented and developed and field tested. And now there's an operating project in the field that works quite well. So we think it's going to be the next big step in shale oil development in the U.S.
I tell you, folks, if you're just tuning into this or getting caught up, there's 1,000 different directions we can go after what you just said. So I'm trying to get my bearings together to figure out which direction to go, because you mentioned that really we're only getting less than 10%. And I was going to ask you, you know, the most prolific shale play, but then also I need to ask you about innovation, and I need to ask you about the ag and energy and the carbon management. So there's a little preview here of where I want to go, but let's start with this, the shale play a little bit, because I've been told by several people that about 70% of the oil and gas drilling is going to come out of the Permian. I was told that about probably 10 years ago. And when you look at where things are going, boy, that prediction might be pretty accurate. What do you see with the different shale plays in terms of productivity?
Well, I mean, you take the Bakken, for example, it's probably 98 or 99% drilled up. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal last year about, you know, studies that have been done by companies like Flow and a few others where they estimated the number of remaining tier one locations that are left up there. Of course, there's still some opportunities to do infill drilling and refracts and things like that. But, you know, it's pretty drilled up. And so is the, you know, so is the Eagle Ford Shale. It's probably 95% drilled up, maybe 90, 95, somewhere in there. The Permian Basin's probably close to 50% drilled. I mean, there was a nice paper done at Urtech last year by Novi Labs, where they looked at the tier one through five acreage and estimated the number of men of that acreage that had been drilled up. So we are drilling through our inventory. And like I said, you know, the shale reservoirs are so tight. The rock is so tight. We're talking 100 to 500 nanodarcies permeability. The energy that pushes the oil through that pore space is called solution gas drive. It's the gas that's the natural gas that's dissolved in the oil while expanding under a pressure drop, causing, you know, pushing that oil droplets through the pore spaces. And so there's a limited amount of energy there. So as a result, you're only going to recover, you know, 5 to 8%, maybe 8% in the Bakken, you know, 5-6% most everywhere else. And these aren't my numbers. I mean, the Texas Bureau of Economic Geology did a study a few years ago, and they estimated 6% recovery with conventional technology, just primary development. So there's a lot of oil left there that needs to be recovered. And there are not too many companies out there yet thinking about how to get more of that oil out of the rock, other than maybe refracts. There's been a few tests done where they inject natural gas and try to inject that gas to a high enough pressure that the gas is driven back into solution. And then they can enable to recover a little bit more recovery that way, maybe 30 or 40% more. That still only gets you up from 6% to maybe 10% of the oil in place. So recognizing that, we came up with a pretty simple solution that we can really increase that recovery from maybe 6% to maybe 18 or maybe as high as 30% of the oil in place. But it's technology that's pretty straightforward and simple. It requires composition reservoir simulation modeling. The interesting thing about this is that applying our technologies, which by the way are called Super EOR and Ultra EOR, you can actually reduce your greenhouse gas emissions by as much as 75%. I'm talking scope one and scope two. And you can reduce your cost per barrel recovery from, currently about $35 to $40 a barrel on primary to maybe $17 to $20 a barrel with our EOR processes. So there's no downside to applying this. Like any new idea that you bring out in the oil industry, no one wants to be the pioneer that collects all the arrows, right? So everybody's waiting for someone else to try it. Well, that ship has sailed. There's been field tests done on this technology in the Bakken and the Utica Shale and in the Permian, and there's now an operating project in the Eagle Ford. So we think that this may soon, as operators start thinking about EOR or secondary recovery, they might start considering these technologies, and we think this process may really help our oil industry, because you can literally double or triple the oil recovery from a given well, which extends the well life, 10 to 15 years, reduces the cost of production, and reduce the greenhouse gas footprint, of course, and so it's a good thing.
EOR, enhanced oil recovery. What are some of the methodologies that you're talking about in the Bakken, where I was located for 10 years? A lot of that had to do with CO2 injections.
It did, yeah. So there's been a number of tests in the Bakken where they tried injecting water, they tried injecting CO2. Most recently, Liberty and a few other companies have been working on injecting alternating slugs of natural gas and water with surfactant, and they claim they can get maybe another 25%. Our process has been tested up in the Bakken, and it works really, really well. I mean, we're looking at getting maybe 200 to 200% more oil out of the Bakken Shale with this process. And what it is pretty straightforward. We use a tuned liquid hydrocarbon solvent. And when I say tuned, we use reservoir simulation modeling, specifically compositional reservoir simulation modeling, that takes into account the fluid properties in the rock as well as the rock properties to figure out what components of liquid hydrocarbons need to be injected so that you can extract as much oil out of the rock as possible. And this is an extraction process where you inject the liquid, it becomes miscible in the oil at a low pressure, like 700-800 PSI. The formation heats it up to formation temperature. And then when you open the well and drop the pressure, that solvent wants to expand very rapidly to a gas and push the oil through the pore space. So it's kind of like supercharging the solution gas drive that the wells were initially producing through. And you do this on a repetitive basis. So you inject the solvent, it flows back up the surface along with the produced oil in a gaseous state. You extract it with a conventional gas processing equipment, you store it on the surface in liquid form, and then you reinject it. So it's a huff and puff or cyclic process. And you get 100% recovery of the solvent on every cycle. And so at the end of your project, you can move the solvent to another location or sell it. But the idea there is it's an extraction process. You're extracting the oil out of the rock, and it's very, very effective.
How's that working with the new regulations and some of the different things? You're out of Colorado, and I saw they have a new oil, gas, and carbon management under one new regulatory body. And some other states are kind of going that direction too. The Marcellus out there, with whether it be New York, Pennsylvania. Are you running into any obstacles, barriers to entry when it comes to the regulatory areas?
We haven't really made much of an effort to try to do anything in Colorado, recognizing that you have a regulatory environment that's just not friendly to oil and gas. I mean, they do whatever they can to try to prevent any oil and gas development. That being said, we think this process will work very well in the DJ Basin, Eastern Colorado. The other hurdle we have, of course, is a lot of the operators in the DJ Basin just aren't, mentally ready to try considering new ideas yet. So our focus has been, pretty much entirely on Texas, the Permian Basin, and the Eagle Ford. You can get your enhanced oil recovery process or secondary recovery process approved administratively in a couple months. It's not a huge regulatory requirement. It doesn't require public hearings. The Texas is very friendly. They actually offer enhanced oil recovery tax credits. They'll reduce your severance tax by 50% for the first 12 years of an EOR project once it's approved. So Texas is obviously the best place to be applying enhanced oil recovery technology. The rest of the states require public hearings. North Dakota, of course, does. Oklahoma, Wyoming, Colorado. It's just harder to get things done in those other states. But, Colorado's probably the worst.
So you mentioned the Permian is probably the most opportunistic. The Eagle Ford, is there anything left there? You mentioned it was kind of all
Yeah, well.
drilled up, but there's some refrac and some enhanced oil opportunities.
There sure are. In the Eagle Ford, there's about 35,000 producing wells there, and about 30 of them, 30% of those are now pretty depleted. And so we can apply this technology in virtually every one of the wells. They don't have to wait till they're depleted to apply it. But operators, is usually don't want to try anything new on, a well that's producing a lot of oil. They want to try it on a well that's pretty depleted. So, again, that's what we're working with an operator down there right now on a project. But there's lots of room to grow. I mean, if you, the Texas Bureau of Economic Geology estimated that there's about 300 billion barrels of oil in place in the Eagle Ford, as well as the Williston Basin, each 300 billion barrels. But in the Permian, they estimated 2,500 billion barrels, so 8 times that amount. So obviously, the biggest prize there is the Permian Basin. And of course, we're talking the Wolfcamp and the Spraberry formations. And that's a primary target for us as well.
Okay. Boy, I haven't heard the Wolfcamp for a while. I used to ask about that, but that kind of fell under the radar. So one of the things I did want to ask you was, a lot of the Jed Clampett oil is gone, the stuff that you could see coming out of the ground. I understand it's still in the ocean. My understanding is the majority of the oil from the ocean is still from leakage. They find it seeping out of the ground, Jed Clampett oil in the ocean, if you will. So, they're that part, I guess, is kind of depleted. And so we're into this shale revolution where a lot of it is known about. We have, especially in North Dakota with the different core sample libraries, a lot of the different oil is known about. So about 10 years ago, we wrote a story in The Crude Life about ag and energy, and we kind of pontificated whether oil and gas was going to kind of go the world of ag, meaning it's more of a price play now more than anything else because you're harvesting. It's not a wildcat game anymore. It's a harvest. So innovations are what are going to become the new wild card, if you will, as opposed to finding it. How much of that ag and energy is similar these days? I mean, is it do you have to be told by the government to go plant sunflowers? And if you do, good luck, that type of thing. You know what I mean? It just seems there's a lot of similarities now.
Well, I think your analogy about, ag and innovation being similar to wildcatting is very good, because that's exactly what we're doing. Is we're trying to show operators how to apply a fairly simple but new technology to their existing wells, so they can recover more oil from those existing wells. And you would think that should be pretty easy to do, but it's not. And the reason for that is, over the last, what, 16, 17 years, the shale plays have evolved, and operators have gotten used to doing things in kind of a manufacturing operation, where they go out and lease a big acreage block, and then they start drilling wells, drilling, fracking, completing, producing. And they just continue to do that as long as they have acreage to drill and complete and frack and produce. That's what they're going to do. But we're now getting to the point where a lot of these basins are being drilled up, the wells are being depleted, And operators are going to have to think, okay, what can I do next? And the first thing they always think about is, well, I'm going to try a refrac. And refracs sometimes can work. It depends on how the well was initially completed in the first place and some other issues, but sometimes they can work and a lot of times they don't work. And yeah, but even with a refrac, even if a refrac is successful, you're still only recovering 5% of the oil in place in, around the, in the drainage area around the well, and it's just due to physics. So you have to apply a different process to get more of that oil out of the rock, and it is so low permeability, you know, it has to be, you know, a huff and puff process where you inject something that can extract the oil out of the rock, and because you're not going to be able to push anything through it from point A to point B. You can only extract it. So that's why we think this technology is going to work really, really well. It works, it modeling it proves out, the core tests prove out, field tests prove out. And of course, like I say, we got an operating project now that work is working extremely well. So we think this is going to be the next big thing. You know, I remember when horizontal drilling was a new thing, you know, back in the early mid 90s, horizontal drilling was just starting to be known in the industry, but it took a while for the industry to catch on and start applying horizontal wells in different types of plays. And of course, shale plays became a natural because that's the last big resource we have here in the United States to extract oil from. We pretty much drilled and depleted every conventional reservoir we have. We started, you know, with structural reservoirs and then stratigraphic traps and then the overthrust belt in the 70s and then you went to, you know, CO2 EOR projects in the Permian Basin in Texas, and then tight gas came along, and then coal bed methane, and now we are here. We are with shale plays, which is the last big resource we have to recover oil from, and so that's why we think these processes can be adapted pretty easily by operators once they decide they want to try them, and then we think we can really help them get a lot more oil out of those wells and extend the life of our fields and boost our reserves, you know, by a factor of 2 or 3 times. So we're excited about this technology and where we think it can go in the next couple of years.
When you're talking about the different technology, how much of that is really done on the well site and how much of that is done in the office? And talk to me about the technology itself. You mentioned it,
Yeah.
the recovery rates are there. So, you know, in the world of agriculture, for example,
Yeah.
you know, I went to North Dakota State University. It's a land grant university. So, you know, a new polymer can completely change the agriculture industry. So talk to me about how these, you know, these refracs and this oil enhancement is changing the industry a little bit.
Yeah, so the you know you always start with a new idea. It's usually somebody, you know, has an idea in their mind. In this case, we started with an idea and then wanted to test it with the reservoir simulation model. So a mathematical model of the reservoir, and you input the data and let the mathematical model give you a prediction on whether it's going to work or not. And so we did that work for a couple of years. And then we were able to obtain some core from the Eagle Ford Shale from an operator. And then we got some core from the Permian Basin Wolfcamp. And we tested this technique in the lab. We actually physically injected solvent into core and then looked to see how much that solvent would extract out of the core under reservoir conditions, where you had the saturated rock under triaxial stress at reservoir temperature and pressure. So we wanted to simulate, you know, the near as we could reservoir conditions and to see whether or not the solvent would really work. And what we found is it worked really, really well. I mean, we, for example, in 6 cycles of injecting the solvent into the core and then flowing it back out, we could strip about 90% of the oil out of that core by doing that. Now, of course, core has a really high surface area to volume ratio. So that 90% is not, you know, you can't translate that directly to the field, but it still showed that the physics worked really well. And of course, then the question is, okay, you can do this in the lab, but can you do it in the field? And that's when you go out and do field tests where you know, take an existing well and you inject the solvent into the well and to see if you're going to recover the oil that the model predicts you're going to recover. And we've done that a number of times, and we found that yes, the model's pretty accurate. You really do get oil in the tanks that are very close to volumes that you predict with the simulation model and with the core test. So we know the physics works, we know the process works in the field, and now it's the real challenge for us is getting operators to start thinking about applying this sort of technology. Because and it's a bit of a challenge because operators today don't do a lot of reservoir engineering. I mean, if you look at a lot of these companies, the reservoir engineers are, doing the reserve estimates, or they're trying to deal with specific problems like, what's the lateral spacing should be, and how many frac stages should I have, and how big should they be, and those sorts of things. They're not really thinking about how to extract more oil out of the rock. Some of them are, but not very many. I mean, there's only probably, I'm going to say, 40 enhanced oil recovery tests being conducted today in the U.S. oil industry, in the shale industry. Most of them have been done in the Eagle Ford Shale. The EOG has probably done the most in the Eagle Ford. I think you have 17 or 18 projects out there. And huff and puff with natural gas works in some cases, but in a lot of cases, it doesn't work because you have natural fractures in the shale. And you start injecting the gas, it gets up to a certain pressure. You start to open those fractures, and the gas wants to go down the fractures and not go into the shale matrix where the oil is to extract the oil. So that's why using a liquid solvent solution that has a much lower, what we call a minimum miscibility pressure, the pressure it takes to get immiscible into the oil, is so much lower. You can operate these at lower bottom hole pressure and get really good recovery. So I think that's where this is going, and it's a logical progression in the oil industry. I mean, we started off vertical wells, now we have horizontal wells, and we're dealing with shale. And this is the next logical thing: is how do you get more oil out of your existing wells? Because that's where your best chance is of recovering more oil and extending your production.
The oil and gas industry is a very tough nut to crack for a lot of different reasons. And we've had our barriers to entry and our frustrations from the crude life's perspective, for example. We've also had some good successes as well. What are you hearing? What are you experiencing? What are you seeing from the your biggest obstacles, from the operators, that type of thing?
Well, you're exactly right. I mean, the industry is very much a relationship-driven industry where people develop, interest or trust, I guess, in people that they know through acquaintances or something like that. So, for example, if I cold call a company, if I know you've got a reservoir engineering manager at company X, and I call and leave a message, there's a 99.999% chance he doesn't know who I am, and he's not going to return my call. Or if I send him an email, if he hears about what we're doing through a colleague or a friend and takes an interest that way, or reads one of our technical papers, then there seems to be, more of an interest that they can develop their own level of interest and then follow up. But it's a relationship-driven industry, and if people don't know who you are, they'll listen to your voicemail message on their phone, and then chances are they'll just hit the delete button. Or if you send them an email, they don't know who you are, they'll think you're a flake and just delete it. So that's been the biggest challenge for us, is trying to get people interested in this. But we have published six technical papers at different trade conferences. We're going to publish another one here in Buenos Aires in December. We're at ATCE and the ERTEC conference next year. We hope to publish a couple more papers. And that's really the best way to get the message out, because people can sit there and read about the technology from a technical perspective and then make their own assessments and then follow up with us if they want to do that. But that it is a challenge to get your idea out in front of people, but it's not just for us, it's for everybody. So
And that is, I was tell you a story that a gentleman from Wyoming told me, because I think it rings true. And it reminded we ended up just getting a client that we lost several years ago, And they came back, and we didn't even reach out to them. They came back to us because of our consistency, our dependability, and the fact that we didn't blow smoke and sizzle. We just kept doing on doing, right? And so it reminded me of a gentleman in Wyoming when I was doing a conference there one time. I was talking with one of the state legislators, and I think he said they only had one Democratic House of Representative in the whole state or something like that. And I looked at him, I said, "Are you for real?" Like, I had never even heard of the super duper quadruple majority like that. And he looked, he goes, "Jason, we were much better off if we had three instead of one." I go, "Well, why is that?" He goes, "Well, then our dumb ideas didn't get rushed to the front. At least we had a little pushback, because we get a lot of dumb ideas at times, and
Right.
his point was right, because I did see that with the oil and gas industry, because I came from the media. So I had a whole totally different look at it, where in the media, if you built a better mousetrap, it would come out on top because you were just after eyeballs.
Right.
And in the oil and gas industry, it was a little bit different because you got a little bit more money. It's not feast or famine like it is in the media. But then you had like these new regulations come in with stimulus dollars, and then you had COVID happen, and you had this financial. There were so many artificial places in the market that building a better mousetrap just didn't matter for about 7 to 10 years. But I'll tell you what, right now, people are looking for that better steak sandwich and that better mousetrap, aren't they?
Well, yeah, I hope so. I mean, the oil industry is pretty has a lot of challenges right now. I think that a lot of companies still, have pretty tight belts and have difficulty accessing capital, and so we see some of that going on. But I think it's just there's just a reluctance to try something new. I mean, it's just kind of it's the way it is. So one of the things we're looking at doing is just, the best way to prove something works is to, invest your own money and do it. And then people can see, oh, look, they've been working on this, and they're producing a lot of oil out of this project, and it appears like it's working really well. So that's our approach, is that, we're happy to, since we own the technology and we have the patents on it, we're happy to license that to operators and show them how it works, but we're also, doing it ourselves. So that's probably the best way to really get people convinced that something works, is to invest your own money and produce your own oil and gas, and then, that makes it pretty convincing, I think, for a lot of companies.
Are you working with operators? You mentioned one down in Texas. Are they seeing good percentage return, or what's it look like?
Yeah, well, we've done one project with an operator in the Eagle Ford Shale play, and the production is meeting the expectations that we set for it through our modeling work. So in other words, it's tracking the incremental oil recovery we're getting out of the well. It's tracking very closely to the way we modeled it. So we think in that particular well, we're gonna increase the recovery by a factor of about five, so 500% more oil. And we think that's probably going to be pretty typical for that part of the Eagle Ford Shale play. But yeah, the operator is pretty amazed, and we think it's making a believer out of a few other operators in the area. So, we think it's like a lot of things, it takes time for something to catch on, but then, it'll start becoming well known when people realize. So like the old thing is like FOMO kicks in, right? Fear of missing out. And we think that'll eventually happen. But it's still a little bit early stage right now, and we know it just takes time. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with what's called a rotary steerable tool. It's what a lot of operators are using now to drill wells.
I know all three of those words, but not in that order. Explain
Yeah,
that.
so it's basically a tool that has a gyro right behind the bit with some arms, and you can actually, program that to drill the hole the way you want it, and it'll stay on track. And that technology came out in 1997, but it really didn't get adapted by the industry until, 2006, 2007, when shale plays started taking off and people started using it then. Now it's second nature. A lot of people use them just, without even thinking. And so we know it takes time for technologies to, become adaptive in the industry. But we're pretty convinced this technology has such an upside for operators. I mean, there's really no downside to it. I mean, you cut your greenhouse gas emissions, you reduce your operating costs, you extend the life of your wells, your existing wells, by 10, 15, 20 years. You could triple the oil recovery at a lower cost per barrel. I mean, there are really no downsides to this. And it's not fairy dust. It's not hard to understand how to do this. You do need to do reservoir engineering. You need to do compositional reservoir simulation modeling, and it's a different way of operating your wells. But one of the nice things about it is when your wells are under this type of super EOR operation, you're either injecting the solvent or they're flowing back. So you don't even need artificial lift equipment to lift the oil out of the well. So we think that's, it's another operational plus to this. So,
How about up in the Bakken? I know that the state has invested a lot of money in enhanced oil recovery, and we've been hearing about it for at least 10 years now. Are you doing any business up here? Is anybody doing any business up here? It's
Unfortunately, no. We've tried to introduce our technology. There's a group up there called the EERC that's part of the University of North Dakota, and they do a lot of research. And we gave them a presentation a couple of years ago on this technology, but they're right now they're going in a different direction. They're working with Liberty, and I think they're working with a couple other operators to try foamed carbon dioxide, a few other things like that. But we're hopeful that eventually they'll want to give this technology a try, and we're pretty convinced it's going to work. We've already modeled the Bakken. We know what we have a pretty good idea what the how this process is going to work. We think we can double the oil recovery with super EOR, and then quadruple it with ultra EOR. So we think eventually we'll be having some discussions with them and seeing if we can help them up there.
Do any of the other operators, are they, do they have to get approval from the state, I suppose, with the permitting, huh?
Well, anytime you do an EOR project in North Dakota, you have to go through the North Dakota Industrial Commission to get approval. You have to tell them what you're doing, and it's a hearing. People can come and ask questions about what you're doing, and they want offset operators want to make sure you're not going to negatively influence the recovery of oil from their wells. So that's true. Pretty much in any state you want to do these projects in. Texas is a little easier to get permits for enhanced oil recovery projects than other states, because they have so many of them. I mean, that my goodness, they have more EOR projects underway in Texas than all the other states combined. So, but yes, you have to go through regulatory process. We haven't even thought about doing anything in Colorado because they're so negative about oil and gas in general. But if one of the operators here in the DJ Basin wants to take a look at our technology, we're happy to work with them to get that done. So,
And it's just primarily the operators you work with?
yeah, I mean, the service companies aren't interested. I mean, when you think about service companies, you're talking about drilling, completion, production, frac companies, and this doesn't really fit into what they do. None of those companies do this sort of EOR stuff or secondary recovery. About the closest they come to it is refracs. But we've tried to talk to Schlumberger, and they've expressed very little interest. Halliburton, no interest. Liberty, no interest. I mean, it's not in their wheelhouse. It's not the way they think. Most of those operators, responsive. I mean, they do what their operating companies want them to do, provide the services they're in demand. So if the operator's not asking for this sort of technology yet, they're not there to provide it. So that's understandable.
Well, I did hear a few words like scope and emission and capture throughout the entire interview. So, I mean, is there an environmental spin to this whole thing?
There is. I mean, we did a study for up in Canada. We were looking at applying the technology up there in the Montney Shale, and we did a study, and we determined that we can reduce scope one and scope two greenhouse gas emissions by about 75%, which is a pretty significant reduction. And when you apply that, you can actually monetize those by getting those reductions certified, so you can get your oil and gas production certified as responsibly sourced, for example, which can also lead to some, price incentives. But more importantly, if you can show that you're capturing or preventing the emission of greenhouse gas emissions, then you can apply for tax credits or carbon offset credits. So there's a tangible aspect to it too, but for sure, when you can eliminate the need for artificial lift equipment and the number of people out on your location every day, you can certainly reduce the emissions from your operations. So,
Are these tax credits or are they straight up cash? Because my understanding is like in the 45Qs went from a tax credit to more of a stimulus.
that's true. And of course, you have our carbon offset credits. So, places like California will pay you if you can demonstrate that you're reducing your greenhouse gas emissions because they have companies that are trying to do that. So they actually buy the credits from you. So there's a couple different ways to monetize those. Of course, in Texas, they also have enhanced oil recovery credits, which is just a reduction in the severance tax you pay on the oil you produce and sell. So there are a number of incentives to do this. From a greenhouse gas emissions or air emissions standpoint.
Is this pretty much just in the the shale plays? I mean, I'm thinking of like the Marcellus, which I guess technically would be a shale, but that's so natural gas heavy. Would something like that work in this?
Our technology's been developed for shale oil recovery, but so in the Marcellus shale play. There's also a shale there called the Utica Shale that has an oil window in Ohio. And this technology has been tested out there and it works quite well. So yes,
Oh, okay.
it works in the Utica, it works in the SCOOP/STACK in Oklahoma, the Permian and Eagle Ford in Texas, the Mancos Shale in the San Juan Basin, the Niobrara Shale and the DJ and the Powder River Basin. And then, of course, the Bakken Shale. And we've also tested this in the Duvernay and Montney Shales in Canada and the Vaca Muerta Shale in Argentina, which is a very large shale play. So we know the technology works on pretty much any shale oil formation. We also have a technology called CycleStim, which is a new type of, it's not really new, it's been around a long time, but people don't do it, but it's a hydraulic fracturing technology that can significantly enhance the number of fractures around the wellbore. And we use it so that we can extract more oil in our EOR process. But it's a fracturing technology that we can also provide to operators and not just for shale wells. It works in shales, sandstones, vertical, horizontal, oil, gas. The process works quite well. And it costs less than conventional frack jobs. So it's another technology that we've developed and offer for operators as well.
What's the elevator pitch? I guess maybe a little bit more than an elevator pitch. What would the, you meet somebody at a conference and you got a couple minutes to give them the bullet points, but also you don't want to lose them as a, if you got their interest. What's your kind of your overview or your conference pitch that you like to tell people?
Well, if you're a shale oil producer, we tell people that we can double or triple the recovery of oil from their wells. In other words, take a 300,000 barrel well and get another 600,000 to a million barrels of oil out of it and cut the cost of production from $32 a barrel to about $20 a barrel and reduce your greenhouse gas emissions by 75%. So that would be the elevator pitch. We license the technology. We own the IP. We can also provide reservoir engineering, project management, project engineering, all the wraparound services. And if they don't want to invest their own money, we can even figure out a way to work with them to provide the capital to apply it in their well. So pretty much soup to nuts.
Right, that's a vertical integration right there.
Yeah.
What's the web? Do you have a website? Do you direct
We
people
do.
to an email, or how does that work?
We do. www.shaleingenuity.com. And the website pretty much explains how this process works and lots of data on how we've applied it, modeled it in different shale plays. And of course, there's contact information. People can fill out a contact form and we'll respond to that. So
Well, did we leave anything out? Anything that we missed you want to make sure that people remember?
No, I just think that's we appreciate the opportunity to come on here and talk to you about what we're doing. We're very excited about it. We know the shale plays are our last big oil resource to develop here in the United States. We know that there's going to be a heck of a lot of oil left behind, like 90, 95% of the oil left behind, unless we apply technologies like this. So we're delighted to say we have something we think is going to be, if not the best, but perhaps the next, with the top two or three processes that are going to come around to extract a lot more oil out of these plays. And we're here and we're ready to help companies when they're ready to try it. So.
The Crude Life would like to welcome and invite each and every one of you to the Energy Exposition happening in Las Vegas, Nevada, February 7th and 8th, 2024. Oil, gas, wind, solar, uranium, Bitcoin, sustainable solutions, and much, much more at this year's Energy Exposition happening in Las Vegas, February 7th and 8th. Folks, you don't want to miss the Crude Life Podcast Pool Party happening February 7th. It's the week before the Super Bowl, folks. The Energy Exposition, the Crude Life is all in 2024. For more information, check out energyexposition.com.